Welcome back, everybody. Another episode of Bootstrapped Web. Brian, this might be our once a summer episode.
Yeah, I think the schedule will, you know, take one of our breaks here in the next couple of weeks because I'll be heading out on our summer vacation next week, and then I'll be back in early July, and maybe we'll get back on the mics then.
All right. Yeah, you're going deep. I'm going to like Charleston for 3 days.
Oh, that's cool. I don't think I've been there.
I have not been there either. Today is the last day of school. So this is the last thing in my week. And then I head out to meet the kids at the beach where everyone went after school's over, after this half day.
Nice. Before we do this big trip next week, we're leaving on Thursday to go to the Philippines and then Cambodia, and dragging the kids out there for like a 2 week kind of hop around these different places, see some of my wife's family in the Philippines. And before we do that, tonight we're going to drop the kids off at grandma's house, and the wife and I get to celebrate our anniversary weekend and
go nice. Down
to New York City, see some comedy.
Oh, that's cool. Date
night. Yeah.
That sounds like fun. We are celebrating our 15-year anniversary in 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I think we're, I should know this. I think we're, at 12. Yeah. The 12 year this weekend.
Yes. Cool. Well, look, it is a juggle. I don't know about you, but when I look out over the summer, I am really excited to spend time with family and travel and go to Michigan, do the whole, all the things. But then I look at what I want to accomplish by the end of the summer on the business side, and it stresses me out. That juggle is stressful.
Totally. I talked about it last time too, and it's like right now I'm like 6 days away from getting on this plane on this big trip. And so I've been in this like prep mode. But frankly, I'm just going to keep working through the trip probably. But
can like, you have the discipline to kind of do that in the mornings? And
I mean, it's going to be hard, especially with the massive time change and everything like that. Yep. But like, I'm trying to like sort of like wrap up some projects now that I definitely don't want to have to touch while I'm doing, you know, while I'm out there.
Yep. Makes sense.
But there's definitely stuff. And it's, of course, this trip is happening at I would say, I really think that we're actually the most busy we've been in the trajectory of this whole business right now. And it's, and there's also urgency to ship features. And we have literally like four big features all in different stages of development right now. And like two of them at least are like in the end and should technically be ready to ship in June, but it'll be during the time that I'm away. So realistically, I'll probably push it to when I'm back, but like we might be able to ship these new mobile apps. Those are probably the closest. Those and also custom domains are close.
Okay.
Like the ability to map your own domain with a CNAME.
I think the stress for myself, for you, for a lot of people listening, it comes from you don't want to compromise on the freedom to spend time with family, right? Yes. Part of the reason you're doing what you do and how you do it is to have that freedom. And then the pressure becomes self-imposed and the stress is self-imposed. It's not someone telling you what you can and can't do, but you know, you're an adult. You have to acknowledge that these responsibilities don't go away because you want to go away.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that this is going to be like an interesting trip because it's like, it's a little bit of everything actually in this, first of all, we've got this like massive flight across the world. So there's,
yeah, it's a big trip,
you know, so there's just like a lot of hours on the plane. I'm sure I'm going to crack open the laptop for a lot of that. And probably sleep a lot too.
Yeah, I don't work on planes. That's my policy. No work on planes.
Oh, I'm like weird about it. I sort of like the time box and you're in this capsule and then I actually like ship something, you know? And then when we're there, the trip is like different phases. Like the first week or so, we're sort of just hanging out with some of my wife's family in Cebu in the Philippines. We'll be kind of tooling around and stuff, but we don't have any like major activities in that first week. We're sort of just hanging out in the Airbnb in the city. And then we go to Boracay, which is like a beach resort area of the Philippines. Do that for a few days, and then we fly over to Cambodia and see some sights.
And then, yeah, more tourism. I try to separate it out into weeks or days that I should do no work. I should really be unplugged. And then the other times where it's a hybrid, if we go to Michigan for 2 weeks, I'm not going to not look at my computer for 2 weeks. That's just not realistic. But I do want to silo off a certain number of days where I'm actually checked out of work, focused on the family. I'm not looking at my phone. Yeah. I have some difficulty, but it helps me justify working certain days and not working other days.
I think that my expectation is usually like I'm absolutely not going to have any full days of work. It's not like, you know, like every day while on vacation is like, you know, 70-80% plus vacation mode. Mm-hmm. But there just are inevitable downtimes when we're resting, or, you know, we're just sort of hanging out and I've got nothing else to do but take out the laptop. But like, I don't have the expectation like I do when I'm at home, where it's like, okay, I'm in the office, I'm going to ship this today. Like that's not happening.
I think this is where your asynchronous work life shines, because
there's no like normal meetings that are being canceled while I'm away. We just don't have the meetings in the first place.
Yeah, that's good. My stress it's more external. It's, you know, as we've focused on mid-market and changing the sales process, I have taken a more active role in demos, second conversations, Rock jumps on the technical discovery calls. So we specifically want to engage in real time with both prospects and the SIs and agencies that serve those prospects.
Yeah.
So that's a win. Today I had a 1 hour demo with an SI. I didn't know what an SI was 3 months ago, right? Systems integrator. Mm-hmm. So these Magento specifically, and which will forever be known as Adobe Commerce now, because I'm with it, and Salesforce Commerce Cloud, the way those ecosystems operate is through SIs. So merchants always have a partner to do the development work with the platform. And so those are like the gatekeepers. Those are the trusted third parties with credibility. That's who the merchant trusts. So it's much more likely for us to succeed and go into market when we make allies with those SIs. So doing it
are those like independent contractors, or are they working like each company has their own SI and that's your point of contact that you're...
No, the easiest way to think of them is agencies, but specifically geared toward accomplishing things that merchants need on platforms. And these are big, some of them are big organizations that I went to a Salesforce event this week. It's my first time going to a Salesforce event. And they don't mess around. It is rocking with music and like, you know, they go all out. It was interesting to think about my experiences at Shopify Unite, which was Shopify's big event of the year, and then go to a Salesforce Connections. So it's Salesforce Commerce Cloud's like big thing for the year. This isn't even like Dreamforce or whatever, like their super mega gigantic event, which is for all of Salesforce, because Salesforce is still a CRM first and foremost. They have a bunch of products. The number of acronyms that I have to get to know is
it's like a whole new language.
It's unbelievable. And so when we go around the floor of that event, you're talking to SIs. Mm-hmm. There are merchants, which are like these golden nuggets with a glow that walk around that everyone wants a piece of. Mm. But the people on the floor are talking mostly are these SIs. The merchants are the most important thing in the ecosystem, obviously.
What, so is this like a typical like trade show where there's just like a lot of vendors kind of presenting their stuff? And
yeah, it's a giant event in a huge hall, and on the edges of the hall are like speaker panels going on, and in the middle of the floor are people with booths that talk about their company, what they can do, and
you know, I've never really experienced one of these like typical trade shows. I know like so many folks in our SaaS world like do these things, especially if you're in these niches, right? Like, but my experience with quote unquote conferences is basically like MicroConf and Founder Summit and, you know, like stuff like that, where it's really more about networking and learning and being part of a community. And it's mm-hmm. not so much about like, here's a big floor where people sell shit to each other.
You know? Yeah, very, very different. You know, MicroConf is, it really is. It's a community that comes together.
Yeah, it's like almost like, don't even call it the same thing. It's something totally different.
Yes, it is like a conference, right? People are getting together and talking in, they feel like they're in the same industry. This is, you know, one competitor booth next to another competitor booth. Mm-hmm. And then the platform itself, and it very, very different.
Who like really goes to, obviously these companies go to, for the sales and promotional, mm-hmm. you know, opportunities, but like, so is it, I'm assuming it's more about developing these partnerships, especially with these like SI agencies, right? Like mm-hmm. it's not like you're really going to go and find a lot of like direct customers there, or would you?
Okay. So both happened, right? The goal is networking in person, which deepens relationships, and the whole ball game is relationships and trust and credibility and friendships and working with who you like and that sort of thing. So it's like conference during the day. And then at night, these SIs are putting on big parties on like a rooftop. You know, fortunately it was right here in Chicago. So I was able to just go in for the day while someone on the team, Rob, who runs partnerships, who we hired from the Salesforce ecosystem specifically to introduce us into this ecosystem. It was great to confirm that he was a great hire, because walking around with him was like, he knew everyone, everyone loves him. It made me feel very fortunate that we have him on board. And then you go to these big parties at night, and that is where you are solidifying relationships mm-hmm. and making introductions and say, oh, that sounds amazing. Let's get on a call next week. And just, so there is like a circuit of these. So every few months, there is an event that all these same people go to, and they solidify their relationships even deeper. And if you are not there, you are going to miss out on that. And that's,
you know, how this is,
ecosystem works.
This is an area where I really think I need to up my game, is just literally going to more of these kind of events, because like, I've been thinking about this a lot, and I think it's going to be actually like a real channel for us. Because we do have, there are coaches and there are influencers of coaches who do send us customers, and it happens randomly. And I feel like we just get lucky every once in a while. Like we have this mm-hmm. pretty huge, it's like a husband wife duo. They're like a influencers of like, they have a pretty large audience of literally just all coaches.
Okay.
I've never heard of them before, never met them before. They just found Clarity Flow. They became a great customer of ours. And then they do their own webinar events and their own like big product launches all about right. how to do a coaching business. And they're okay. running it all on Clarity Flow.
Oh man, dream.
And like, and they do this once every 2 months or so. And when they do, like, it's literally a spike of customers for us, you know?
Right. Just take all of that same concept, reduce the amount of luck required.
That's the right? thing. It's like how do I double down on this strategy? Yes. And it's like, the only thing that I can really think of is just go to more conferences and meet more people and Absolutely. Develop these relationships.
You got to put your socializing hat on and yeah. acknowledge that it is a multiplier for your business. If you go to a conference, if you go to, you know, ConvertKit has something coming
that's
up.
That's the one, I think it's going on right now. Like that was one on my list that I think I should be going right. to.
So yeah. if you go there and you meet that husband and wife team and you have dinner together and you have drinks at a bar and you laugh and you get to know about each other's families and kids and dreams and, you know, what you do in life beyond business, that relationship is going to bear more fruit in an authentic way. It's not going to be yeah. like, oh, I snagged them for more customers. It's going to be like, we like each other and yeah. we like doing business together. And now we do more business together.
And totally.
Or you go to the bar and you meet someone totally new. And that, so whatever it is, it is
100%. Yeah.
Yep.
Because like I've tried to do it like the lazy way of like, you know, reaching out online and, emails and like, and I'll do like webinars like remotely with people. I've done that before, but that's been like hit or miss, and like not such a priority. We'll sort of push it off. Like you see, but like when it's when you develop these in-person relationships, I think that's the only way to like increase that luck surface area, you know?
Yep. And when it comes time to sell your company.
Yeah. You just have the
people network that you know up. It's a great post on LinkedIn by Drew Sanaki. So mm-hmm. friend of mine from the e-commerce world, great operator. And he recently wrote a post on how he regrets not going to more events with his previous company, because when it was time to sell the business, he just didn't know all the right people and is convinced that he would have done a lot better if he just had more surface area,
you know,
among potential buyers.
And like the interesting thing is, like looking back on literally all of my businesses, like I don't even consider myself to be this to be one of my strengths is like professional networking. It sort of just happens, big, you know, because I feel like I get lucky. But looking back, like I think that, you know, Audience Ops certainly had a lot of customers come through, like somehow connected to my relationships through MicroConf or through this podcast mm-hmm. or just meeting people, you know, and that stuff.
And who bought Audience Ops? Someone from that network.
So that stuff happens.
Yeah. So it's funny. What at some point during the event, I was like reporting back to Rock and Jessica, just giving them updates because, you know, they're interested and they want to know. I want to keep them excited about what's going on. And one of my messages back to them was, whatever we have budgeted for events, it needs to go up
mm-hmm.
because the idea that our competition is walking around those same halls and we're not is unacceptable. It is not, it is not a smart thing for us to do. So there is definitely a way to build a business without any of it. For us right now in this business, we have to get out on the circuit and make sure we are there.
Yeah.
No question. No question.
Especially like the other stuff,
market and like that complex sales process, it's infinitely better and more effective.
I mean,
people know who you are.
We spend so much time over the years on this podcast talking about like what are we doing on marketing and funnels and checking mm-hmm. and putting these like we're always going to have engines in place to produce content and execute on SEO and run ads and do your email marketing and out and sales outreach and sales demos. All those processes are going to happen day to day. That's how the business runs.
Yeah.
But I feel like nothing really makes more of an impact than having these high value relationships or a personal network or a company brand awareness network mm-hmm. and just do like, cause like look again, like looking back, like to me that's what has been, you know, whatever pieces of success I've had, the big changes have come from that. And the little wins of like, yeah, we had this SEO ranking or that funnel sort of worked. Like, yeah, those things happen, but like to really make an impact, especially early on, you need these big wins, and that can just happen in a partnership, you know?
Yeah, it increased the serendipity. So here's an example. I think I mentioned a few weeks ago, I sent out a tweet and a very serious merchant on Salesforce Commerce Cloud, you know, one that we would all recognize and that we would kill to bring on as our first big Salesforce merchant, because that would have the same impact that Native Deodorant had with Cardhook. At Cardhook, before Native came on board, we were working with the drop shippers and we loved them, but a lot of them actually specifically didn't want people to know that they were using us because they were using us as like a secret weapon mm-hmm. and they didn't want their competition to know. So it was like very counterproductive. Like, can we broadcast your success? Yes. Only if you anonymize it.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. But when Native came on board, that was like a beacon of credibility, and that allowed other direct to consumer companies like Magic Spoon and Goalie and these others that are more careful and a bit more risk averse on the vendors they choose. It gave them a green light.
Mm-hmm.
So we are climbing our way up that credibility ladder at Rally also. And this is one that would, you know, put us on the map there. So I set up a call earlier in the week on Monday. Now, I Zoom for a living, right? This is what I do all the time. the one time my camera doesn't work on Zoom, it's with this prospect. So this is like a get to know you, right? No other people, no solutions engineer, no salespeople, just me and you. Let's just get to know each other. And my camera doesn't work. I was so upset. So I did my best, but I don't think I'm at my best without the camera, because that's the connection you're trying to make.
Mm. So you went audio only.
That's right. And then what happens? Turns out my contact, the person I had to call with, was in Chicago doing a panel on how they just went composable on the front end. And so I was able to go to the panel and shake hands afterward and say, I'm the guy without the camera. And that just moved the relationship forward another little bit. And
hell yeah.
This is something that is going to be a 6-month process to see even if we could even get in the room.
Yep.
But it moves it forward. It's just luck because you're in the room.
I love it.
Yep. Hell yeah.
That's awesome.
All right. What do you got going on?
What's new? So I was in my mastermind group yesterday, and I won't obviously go into everything that I went into there, but you know, one high level takeaway of what I'm seeing, you know, because I obviously look at the numbers all the time and what's happening with the business, and it's been in this weird it's a difficult phase that we're in right now, and I'm coming to terms with what that actually means for the current trajectory. So it's just a weird phase right now. Like, we're seeing MRR grow.
Okay.
On a multi-month basis. We just had our biggest growth month yet in a while.
Awesome.
But you know, digging into the numbers, like, that's mostly due to the price increase plus a few other, some like lucky factors, a competitor shutting down. We've had a couple of these like affiliate webinars, like kind of fire off unexpectedly, mm-hmm. and sending us a bunch of traffic. So all that's good, but you know, we're still seeing a lot of the same, churn numbers that we've seen over the last year and a half. We're seeing, every day I'm getting these customer requests, the feature requests. When are you going to be shipping this? When are you going to be shipping that? Or they just think that we have all these features that we're sort of promoting on the website that we don't really have yet. So there's just, I could feel there's still a disconnect in the product.
Mm-hmm.
And it is showing in some of the numbers. So like the top line revenue keeps going up, and that's good because we're basically replacing these older, lower priced customers with higher priced customers now. But we still have, you know, I actually feel like we're somewhat close to what we might call product market fit, but mm-hmm. the product side of that equation is not there yet. Like, we clearly have gaps in the product that we are actively working on shipping, and I think that we are close. We are literally close on some of these features, and I think I talked about it last week, like eliminating the coming soon label on our pricing page. Like, we're close to that. And once we get there, and after I'm back from my trip in July, like, we'll be in a place where we've shipped these big features, and like, now I can just go hard on these sales demos, and everything that they're asking for, we now have, right? Mm-hmm. So like, that's the thing that's sort of right around the corner, but until we get there, we're still in this weird kind of difficult place where it's like, yes, customers are still signing up. There's still a lot of excitement. I'm getting sales demo requests. I'm getting all these different things, but we don't quite have the product yet. And it does result in some churn. It results in, like, you know, not great activation at times. And so it's like,
you know, the truth.
That's the truth underneath the numbers. Mm-hmm. And I have to be okay with that. Like, we're executing the right things. We have the right priorities right now for what we need right now. But it's still going to be several more weeks of like,
yeah,
kind of like cloudy skies until things open up.
Yeah, you know? That sounds like a mature approach, you know, a mature analysis, because it's definitely better than MRR going down and having the same issue. Definitely better than that. But also, there's no need to delude yourself on where you feel like things are. So if it's mixed, that's okay. It reminds me at Cardhook at one point when I would send out an investor update and it showed revenue going up by a lot. But I was in the same boat. I knew it was mixed. Revenue's going up. We're happy about that. But churn this month was 18%.
Yeah.
Right. So the responses, the people who are not in software would be like, oh my God, amazing. But like Rob Walling would be like, how's it going on churn? What's next in the, because you understand where things are going. If you take a snapshot and you say MRR went up by 10% this month, isn't that great? Sure, but you're trying to build a machine that really works, not one that's going to fall apart on you down the road.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, I mean, that's the other thing is like just looking at like the marketing numbers, like we get a base level of organic traffic and that's going to result in X number of signups and conversions every month. And I think a lot of that just speaks to like, okay, like there, you know, it's not like we're knocking it out of the park on those numbers and those conversion rates, but we have rates that look like, okay, there's at least some like base level that's like acceptable that shows like what people are seeing on the website, they are compelled by and they want to sign up for, and a portion of them do want to buy it. But there's still like gaps in like what they're ultimately really looking for. And, you know, and so like that's just really, really clear. And we're right around the corner, but it's not there yet. You know,
that is both exciting and also speaks to the frustration at how long this stuff takes.
Yep.
It's just the nature of it.
I got another thing that like, I'm sure you'll have a lot to say. I mean, we, you know, we talk about the same topics over and over.
Wait, hold on. Do I need to put on my Apple Vision Pro super goggles before?
Oh man, we could just spend the rest of the pod, like talking about that or, I mean, dude, there's so many other stories in the world that are just crazy right now.
don't go politics on me.
No, I won't. I mean, have you followed this PGA Live Tour merger thing? Holy
fascinating.
Shit.
Fascinating.
I mean, I'm actually surprised. All right, I'm just going to go on a whole side. Like, I'm actually surprised at how this story is not blowing up as like the number one story across all feeds. It's pretty big.
They don't want it. What if you were them, would you want it to blow up? You just
talk. No, but like this is such a major development.
Yes, it is.
It's not, it transcends just sports itself. It's
agree.
I mean, this could be one of the biggest stories in all of sports history in some senses, like history. Like
it's so fascinating because it crosses over into culture and it crosses over
into world politics.
And world politics. That's right. That's right. You like the PGA just talked all this trash.
Yes.
About how the ethics of the Saudis are unacceptable. And like they brought in like 9/11 into the whole.
Yeah. Thing. And like half of the PGA players did not take the multiple hundreds of millions of dollars to go play for LIV.
Oops.
And then,
sorry, Rory.
yeah. Right. And Tiger and all these, and like, oh man. And then now like the PGA kind of like they've been dealing in secret for the last 7 weeks. And now like Saudi, like basically owns all of golf at this point.
Saudi came in and they didn't just grab a team. Right. Yeah. They grabbed the whole league and they did it in a part of American culture where exclusion, elitism, sexism, antisemitism, racism, like all of it is all mixed up at like a fundamental level. When I go onto a private golf course, I have something in the bottom of my stomach that doesn't feel right. Because I don't know what to wear and how to walk and what to say and when am I supposed to pick it up? Or it has just that bullshit just overhanging the entire damn sport. And they talked all this shit about what was and is not acceptable and is and how they get to dictate that. And then they just sold out like everybody else.
It's unbelievable.
They just sold.
It raises all these questions. It's like it's almost like, well, that's now like the playbook. If you're a state or a power that has money that like mm-hmm. forever. I mean, and you want to take over a major part of culture in the Western world. Like, I mean, you look at like tennis could be next, right? Or any other major sport, like that, like there's a playbook now that they could basically follow.
You know? Right. It's I'm no expert in this stuff, so I could be wrong on a bunch of the stuff, but it looks like what happened is that they identified the opportunity in the fact that the players are more important than the league.
Right. Like they targeted a league where it's like the players are just independent contractors and they can start to pick them off one by one, you know, which is what they did, right? You know?
Right. Because the PGA wanted things to stay as is, where the PGA is more important than the individuals. But in reality, out in the actual market of fans and dollar spenders, the individual people are more important than the league.
Yep.
And so if they can identify the arbitrage opportunity of, well, we're going to pay them what we think they deserve, it just starts to disrupt all the status quo.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens, right? Some leagues are stronger than others, right? The NFL has a...
Yes. They're like really like locked down. You know?
Yes. Yes. The NBA, like... It is interesting. Like right now you could basically just target individual events now.
Yeah.
You could just have on Augusta, on the Masters that weekend, you can just create a new event that same weekend with a bigger purse. What are you gonna do?
Yeah. Yeah. There's like some history there and all that. It's
yes. Crazy. But while we're needing to have these business maneuverings in sport that's so public and so pop culture and out there and talked about and criticized.
One of my while we're talking about this, one of my favorite podcasts that I just started listening to a lot is the Joe Pomp Show. Are you familiar with this?
I know
Joe Pompliano.
Yeah, Anthony Pompliano was like a big personality in crypto, and his brother Joe started coming out with these incredible threads on Twitter.
Yeah,
about an interesting.
It's his threads on Twitter in the form of a podcast.
That's cool.
Like 20-minute shows where he just goes deep on like an explainer on business plus sports, like the business behind sports. And it's I learned something every single and it's about like the current events of business and sports. Mm-hmm. And he had a really great breakdown of this whole PGA Live thing. Really great podcast. I definitely recommend it.
Cool.
Anyway, should we get back to
I guess to our little,
that was good.
We can just talk about Apple next.
Oh man.
All right. So I buried my lead, and for mm-hmm. anyone who's still listening, now it's just us here.
What do you got?
We closed our first six-figure deal. And goddamn, that feels good.
Yes.
It felt like a real breakthrough.
What can you share here? But like, what do you think ultimately was like the deciding factor? What got them over the finish line?
At the end of the day, I think what it took us getting a real deep understanding of what their problem was, what they were trying to accomplish, and then mapping that back to what we could do for them. And that's not one conversation. And it's multiple touch points, and it's relationship building and trust building. And we learned a lot. It's tough to admit or accept, but so of course how these things happen. In the same week, we also lost a big opportunity. And that opportunity started maybe 30 or so days before this opportunity that we won. And looking back at the way we ran that process, I am one, not surprised that we didn't win it. And two, if we started that process today, I think we'd have a much higher chance of winning it.
Yeah.
So it sucks, but it also feels like progress.
Just building out that muscle. You're stronger today than you were a few weeks
ago. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So next time a big opportunity like that comes around, we'll have a better chance of winning it.
I mean, do you think that you guys executed on the sales process and understanding what they wanted, and you can put together an offering that fits their need. But like, are you aware of what the different competing options that they were considering were?
Yeah, we got to know all of that in detail. But, yeah. And that's really what helped close the deal. Mm-hmm. Because we had a full understanding so that we weren't competing on the basis of do they want to use our product or not. That's like not enough. But to understand their options, yeah. their current situation, their history, where they want to go, what their team looks like, who the decision makers are, like we're starting to get an understanding of that complexity around that sales process.
Because that's how I've come to think about sales in general. Just boiling it down to a super simple terms, it's not about convincing someone to buy or not. Mm-hmm. They've already come to you with a need. They're going to fill that need somehow, or they've been already filling it somehow, and they're switching.
Right, or they can just go back to home base to continue doing it the way they are, right. Which is what most people lose to. That's
right.
What we all
right, but even in that case, they're still filling. They still have that need, and it's being filled in some way. Yep. Like so, like just to think about a sale, like making a sale. It's not about like convincing them to take some new action. It's about being the better solution than their alternatives.
Yes. What's most important to them?
I'm curious, like, you know, because you've been talking about how like you know you guys are so new at this sales process now and still figuring it out, and the muscle is getting better. Hmm. So there are still gaps, but you guys were still able to overcome and make it happen.
Yes, like, and we made mistakes.
Yeah.
So looking back over the course of the process, which in total was probably about 60 days. If we look at our interactions early on in the process, we did things that endangered the sale. Mm-hmm. We did things that knowing what we know now, we wouldn't do the same way.
Yep.
The points of communication, people jumping in, trying to be helpful, but creating confusion instead of going through one point of contact. Replying too quickly and a bit too eagerly, right? You want to be helpful, but it's not, it can be counterproductive.
Yep.
We did some things that were right and maybe we didn't knowingly do them, but they were still right.
Yep.
So establishing,
and I guess there's part of
early
part of
on and getting buy-in that way and having it go over email and having the person say, yes, that makes sense to me. In a documented way, like all this stuff was part of it.
There's got to be some level of like kind of building up this goodwill, relationship building, right? Like, because like the prospect on the other end, like they probably see and know, like okay, like they're navigating the sales process just like we are, mm-hmm. but we both want this solution to be filled, so we're gonna work with them to get to the finish line, like. You know, like I'm just thinking about like, because lately, again, like I'm talking to customers every day and I'm hearing complaints from customers all the time mm-hmm. about like, oh, this bug happened, or like I just shared it with this huge audience these things are breaking.
Okay.
And that sucks in the moment. And I hate to tell people like, oh, we don't have that yet or something like that. But at the end of the day, like most of these customers are still paying customers, like they still haven't left. And so, mm-hmm. So that's what I keep trying to wrap my head around, is that like there are customers who routinely are not super thrilled about the experience, but they're still here because they're assessing all of their options, and we're not perfect for them yet, but they haven't found any other solutions that mm-hmm. are perfect, and that puts us still in the running. So like we're gonna be more and more smoother and perfect for them in the future.
Yes,
but like. But it's good to know that like we're getting there, and they know it. So and I'd imagine there's something like that happening in your deals that are coming together, right?
Where it's
like
absolutely.
They can smell the gaps too, mm-hmm. but they're still in it because it's like
yeah, and you are creating value and growing the business while your product is imperfect.
Yeah.
That's just you know the norm.
Yep.
Yeah. So that it feels like a great validation, and sending that out to our investors like lit up a few people, because so I went through like a little wave, right? It was super, super happy. You know, that's worth celebrating. Yeah. It's a significant milestone, significant amount of money, changes the burn, all that good stuff. Then the next day, I got the no from the other big opportunity. So, of course, like, hey, you got to even this thing out. Don't ride too high. And then I started to think deeper about what it meant for the business. And I started to think, okay, so this mid-market approach is more validated. Mm-hmm. It also, the math is dead obvious. Do one of those deals a month, and you can grow in a much healthier way than doing 20 smaller deals. Mm-hmm. And related to that, it also tells you there's enough margin on that deal that we can hire really talented salespeople. And if you can marry great salespeople with a good product and pricing power, you can build a significant business. Mm-hmm. And all of our investors and VC world in general, in B2B, right? Not consumer. But the real question, when I talk to investors, when I go in person and go to the conferences and have a beer with one of our investors, what they really want to understand is, how does this thing get to 100 million ARR? Mm-hmm. And it's not how do you get to 100 million ARR right now? It is, does this have the DNA to get to 100 million ARR? Is it possible in your market with your model to do that?
Yeah.
Because if not, then you should probably look to make some changes.
Yeah. And this is like the first step that like your recent changes in this direction are worth taking more steps. Like,
yes. Because if we look at, our model in the SMB, it's, and then you look at how difficult it is to onboard people and all that, it's tough to square how that happens. Mm-hmm. But then if you look at the Adobe and the Salesforce Commerce Cloud, and you look at those ecosystems, and you just see one competitor that's stumbling, and some people think will be out of business in the next 6 months. And then you look at, okay, you just closed one of those, and that's, you know, a merchant that does tens of millions. It's not that they're small. It's just that there are a lot of other bigger ones. And it starts to dawn on you that actually there is a path to that. And maybe we took a few little steps in the right direction. It's just really encouraging to say, okay, now let's see what we can do to go further in that direction.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. So,
I got one more small thing.
Not Apple.
It's so cool, man. I've been like really tuning into all that stuff. And like, I'm not going to get one of these things next year, but like, I could see myself getting like the third generation of the vision thing. Like,
I think that's so a normal cool response. Some people are hating. Some people are hating for public.
There's always going to be that.
Some people are fanboying. Yeah, it's all that.
But you know what? If Apple history is, if you look at Apple's history, like the watch wasn't a huge deal right when it came out of the gate. Even the iPhone was a little bit like weird. In
it looked
very
like another phone with a better screen.
Yeah,
you didn't realize what it was really going to do.
It takes a few generations of the product, and then all of a sudden, like spatial computing in your eyesight is the new thing. Like, and everyone has a strategy for it. And
I like that it is augmented, and it's not like metaverse cartoon world.
Yes,
that
it's very reality. Like that's
all. Yes, you're looking at your regular field of vision that has layers alongside of it.
I've been on this. This is not the thing I was going to talk about. Like, I've been literally this week. I've been like my back has been starting to hurt a lot, right? From sitting at the desk and using the mouse and
being
all
old.
That, sure. And being old and mm-hmm. like I've tried every single mouse. I've tried every single posture. All these different things. But I think that what the thing I actually need right now is like to get really good at keyboard shortcuts. I've always been okay at it, But now I'm really just trying to avoid the mouse and the trackpad as much as possible and stay on the keys. That's better for my back, right? So there's that. But then I'm looking at this Vision Pro thing, and mm-hmm. they're targeting the work experience, the work environment. Like you mm-hmm. can do your work in this AR world area, right? And the other cool thing is that it's like you're just using your your hands at like I think the mouse click is your thumb and your index finger, right?
Yep.
And you can, so it's like, if you think about it from a natural posture standpoint, you're removing these external pieces of hardware that you have to have your hands and arms and posture around in order to do your work. And if you start to picture yourself in the future, and if this becomes the norm where like a lot of us are in our remote workspace, we've got multiple monitors around the room in this AR space, and I could be in a comfortable chair, comfortable seating position, like, that's just been on my mind this week because I've been like trying to get away from my mouse and fix my back issues. Like
how it impacts your physical approach to.
But it's almost like that, just the way that the interface works in this Vision Pro, like that's pretty compelling to me. Like, you know, I don't know if it's $4,000 compelling to me, but like it's
right. But what if it's you know, $1,200 and then you get financed and it feels like a cell phone plan?
Exactly.
It'll get to all that.
Yep. Super interesting.
Yeah. What were you going to say?
Let's try to stay on track. For one. I did a monthly update with my team couple days ago, and it came out of, and this was something that I had intended to do more of this year, which is like, if you know, you talk about how you do this, like all hands, where you're giving the whole team like an update on where things stand and where we're headed in the next few weeks and strategy and celebrate the wins and all this kind of stuff. And I have been minimal to non-existent on that kind of stuff in the way that I operate my teams. I've always been very, very hands-off, extremely minimal on meetings, extremely minimal on like big announcements. It's really just more like day-to-day, let's just get our work done. We're almost 100% asynchronous. I don't do team one-on-ones. I don't do stand-ups. I don't do weeklies. I don't do any of that. And I think that's good in some ways. And we do have some gaps in without that kind of stuff. And I was actually reminded of this from my marketing assistant this week. We were in our routine day-to-day async video messaging back and forth. We're just talking about a project. And it was sort of like random out of nowhere, like unrelated to the project. She was like, you know, I you haven't done one of those updates in a while. And I've been wondering about that. Like, you should do that more. Like, she just kind of mentioned that offhand.
Okay. Right? Okay.
And I was like, you know, I've been meaning to do it. And I keep actually forgetting to do it because I'm so zeroed in on the actual project work that I forget to like come up for air and talk to the team about what the trajectory looks like. Right. So, okay. First days of June, I recorded a 20-minute message. Like, here's an update on where things are at. This is our MRR. This is the growth. Here's what we're seeing, the good, the bad. Let's celebrate some wins from everyone on the team, what they've been working on. And it sort of like felt good, especially to like acknowledge the wins of each person in front of everyone.
Yes. Yes. Because they're human.
They're human. And I think part of me is like, well, why do we need to do that kind of stuff when I'm talking to this same crew every single day anyway, in the thick of our projects? Like it just feels redundant to have this higher level meeting or announcement or presentation about what's going on when it's like, all right, well, let's, in just a few hours from now, we're still talking about the current projects.
Okay.
But like I think it was still good for the team. And like it wasn't like night and day, but like I could tell in the days that followed that, like everyone just felt a little bit more, I don't know, like on point, a little bit more active, a little bit more motivated. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but like, I just think it's helpful. And I got to make more of an effort to, you know, like at least once a month, like, come up for air, share some numbers, share some wins, give an update, talk about what's, you know, because I think this also comes back to like, I know and I see so much more about what's going on in the business and the product and the customers than what they see. They only see the projects that are in front of them.
Yeah.
And I have been struggling to communicate to my team what exactly are our priorities right now, and how should we be thinking about what's important and what's secondary, you know? And I need everyone to be on the same page, and that's how you do it, I guess, you know. But that's like a skill and a routine and a workflow that I've never really been good at, like just, you know, keeping the high level vision like communicated.
You know? Yeah. So there are enough things related to what you just said that I cannot remember all the things that were triggered in my mind as you were talking, because it's really complicated and interconnected. What you are struggling with, I believe, is the same thing I struggled with at Cardhook when it was four of us, and then it went to six and then eight of us very quickly. Mm-hmm. And when it was four of us, it felt so connected and so straightforward that none of that was necessary. It was
how I always feel about it now. Like there's
for you, and five. Then we're gonna jump into Zoom 30 minutes later, and then
exactly talk right. Okay. Right now, it's like me plus five. There's four of them are developers, one's a marketing person.
Okay, and I know for me, it was a bit shallow in the motivation related to the business. The motivation was like four of us, let's get together, let's make some money. Yep. It was like kind of, you know, straightforward. And then as soon as we hired number five and then six and seven, eight pretty quickly, I remember Ben basically pulled me aside and was like, these new people, they don't care about making money. Mm-hmm. They're making their money with their salary, and they need more. They need more motivation than you making money as the business owner. And I would like kind of smack myself in the forehead, like, yeah, okay, obviously.
That is such a good point.
Now, here's the struggle, though. The struggle is how to do that authentically, because I couldn't bring myself to get up on a chair and talk about how we're going to change the world with better abandoned cart software. I was like, what? It felt so inauthentic. Right. Yes. And so I had to find authentic themes that were motivating and interesting that I could speak to without feeling like a fraud. Mm. I found that in two places. I found that in making customers' businesses better, because these are real people you would talk to and get to know. And when they did better, like they were happier, their lives are better, their families are better. And that felt like I could hang on to that as a true motivator that made sense to me. And then I also looked around at the team and their day-to-day. So two things connected. Their day-to-day happiness at work mattered because I cared about them. And then right next to that, their ability to do interesting creative work that goes beyond what I tell them to do as the next task is, that's the superpower. That's the hire great people and let them do their work thing. But if they aren't happy at work and like working with the people that they're working with, they won't take the little task that's on their desk and use their mind and creativity to go beyond it to understand what's next and how that's connected to the current task.
100%. I love that. That's awesome, man. Because that is what makes it, I think, difficult for me sometimes when it's like, I only relate to this in terms of like building a business, right? Like, but I can't expect my team to think about it in those terms. They're just thinking about it like,
yes,
this is their livelihood. Like, this is what mm-hmm. they come in every day and they're working on this thing. And like, yeah, they enjoy their work, they enjoy their craft, but like they don't own the business like I do. So I can't expect mm-hmm. them to care about the business like I do, you know?
Not in that same way, in the relationship to owning equity in the business and the potential upside of that in the future. That's not their calculus. It's not that same way. And that's okay.
Yep.
And if they can leave and get the same salary elsewhere, then you got to give them more. And then all of a sudden that starts to be another job of yours along with what you regularly do. And that's why, I mean, I think that can make a tremendous difference.
In
the actual performance of the business and your happiness day to day.
I believe it, you know, and also like a piece of that is like helping them understand what the priorities are, like especially on the marketing side. My marketing person, like, she actively asks, like, you know, because we do have a lot of different things that we're trying to do. But, you know, she needs to know like where she should like spend her time and energy. And also like, she's suggesting things like, yeah, I'm going to execute on this stuff, but like, what if I get into a little bit of this over here? Like, let's get that going. And I have to be sort of like sensitive to like she can't just keep doing the same thing every single day. She needs to mix it up a little bit and get creative on this thing over there so that we're, you know, just making it like a good creative role for people, you know.
Yeah.
With developers, it's a little bit more straightforward. Like we have a queue of issues that they're working on, but even that I could sort of tell like what each person's different strengths and interests are in terms of the type of issues that are taken on, you know.
Yeah. Where this became very real for me is going one level above the individual contributor level. So hiring someone who is experienced and a manager, then it becomes really a matter of, okay, now I feel like I'm performing for them because you want to keep them. You want to keep them happy and you want them to be happy so that the people that report to them are really happy. And then you start to realize like, oh, I need to create like an environment where they can grow and they can get better. And they're thinking about their career on what happens after they leave your company. And so the title matters. And that, you know, it starts to be a few steps removed from the customer and the problem and the revenue.
Right.
It is a few steps removed, but it's like, you can't go that far without getting that right for really talented people.
And the other thing that I'm becoming more comfortable with and like doing a little bit differently in this company than in the previous ones is just being like fully transparent about everything. Numbers, MRR, customers.
Are you currently fully transparent?
Now I am. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
I wasn't. Like in audience ops, I wasn't. You know, I just
kind of left that off to the side.
Yeah. I mean, whatever. You could probably do some back of the math and see how many clients are we serving and how much are they paying, and they get a general ballpark of what our revenue is. But yeah. I've never had meetings or presentations where I'm sharing numbers or growth rates or churn rates or anything like that with the team, right?
I think people love that stuff. Love it because it feels like you're being treated like an adult.
I also think that like in this type of business, a SaaS startup, we're still grinding it out. We're being scrappy. We're small. I think now, like the more I can get comfortable with being transparent now while we're early, this is actually when it's interesting to be transparent. It's like, look, we just tripled our MRR because we in a matter of months because we're
from the work that you did.
Because we're still a baby business where you can still double and triple, right? Like, and they could like literally like see this kind of and feel the difference in like the support tickets that come through and like, and so like I'm just like accepting like just be fully transparent. Don't feel like, oh, they shouldn't know these numbers or what are the implications of sharing this or that. Like, just share it all. And it just makes it, frankly, easier. And I actually think it's more meaningful. It adds more meaning to everybody's work here.
Yes. It leans into the actual advantage.
Because I'm not super public about numbers publicly, as people know.
Like, sure, but who cares?
But we're all working inside this business. We should know what's going on.
Yes, the public is the public. The startup is a conspiracy. It's a few people getting together saying, we're just going to change shit. How about that? We're just going to show up and be this new thing that changes the way people behave, changes the way money flows, changes the way their customers experience it. And that's like, you know, that's ballsy. And it's really fun. And it's actually the most attractive thing about a startup. So I recently learned that someone that we hired had an offer at the same time that I didn't know about from a much larger company. And from the outside, you could look at it and say, well, that company has raised, I don't know, $100 million, 500, who knows? They have 150 employees or whatever. You could think that's more attractive to someone. But if you lean into, well, if you join this group of 20 lunatics that are really trying to do things and you're going to be the first one in this role, that gives them this sense of like, all right, I'm going to do cool things here. It's going to be more risk, but I'm going to look back on this experience and say, look what we did together.
There's other major benefits than just the salary number, you know?
Yes. Yes. And that's
how we compete as small, scrappy startups, you know?
Yep. Yep. It's a beautiful thing. It's great. Yeah. And it attracts just the right people who are actually not that motivated by money. They're motivated by feeling great about what they do.
It's weird because it's like it's super hard to find people who operate really well in this type of environment. But when you find them, that's how it works.
You know? Yep. Hallelujah. Yeah, all right. Awesome. Great place to end. This went long because it was so good. last week of school, I'm going off to the beach, celebrate with my kids.
Hell yeah.
Have a great weekend, everyone.
All right. Later, folks.